Sanatan Greats in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. That an author or a speaker should follow the following rule. Madhurena Samaparat. That Queen Kunti is also doing the same. Because each thing that each time we've ended with a cluster of verses, it's also been very sweet, but one should end on a sweet note. So in these glorious prayers of Queen Kunti, there's just seven verses left. We're going to start with text 37. She's given reasons for Krishna's descending, reciprocating, maybe he's reciprocating with his devotees. And for that matter, those who are not his devotees, to provide all for subject matter for hearing and chanting. Just his wonderful performance of Leela and unparalleled sweetness of loving association and attracting his devotees, which attracts our hearts also. So to rejuvenate the devotional service of himself, just so that the conditioned soul suffering from the material pangs might take advantage and gain release from their circumstance of life. Text 37. Oh, my Lord, you have executed all duties yourself. Your purpose for appearing is now, she's concluding, not only your reason for visiting us, but your reasons for appearing are fulfilled. And we know what that means. Krishna is going to leave Hastinapur, and Krishna is going to leave the world. So the mood of separation is being churned. It's such a high subject. But it appears many times, several times in the first canto and then consecutively throughout. Are you leaving us today? Although we are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us, now when all kings are at enmity with us, the indication is, it looks like everything's fine, Krishna. All the demoniac kings have been destroyed. Pritranaya sadhunam vinashaya shudus kritam dharma sang. You've done all these things. But wait. Those demoniac kings that were assembled on the Kurukshetra battle, they have their successor kings from all over the world. And those successor kings are going to be in enmity. They're going to want to get back. Of course, they don't. They were happy to have Yudhisthira as the emperor. But Kunti speaking like that, certainly there will be some envious persons who will feel ill towards the Pandavas, because that's just the way it is. Someone is in a superior position, and some persons will be envious, no matter who it is that's in a superior position. Even great souls. So she's giving her reasons, some of the reasons she's already given. She's giving more reasons why in these four verses the theme is being in the sanatha position, having a Lord and Master. To Krishna, that's you. So you are a Lord and Master. How can you leave us? We need your protection. We have no protection but you. This is important, understanding that all the while that the Pandavas were doing just amazing things, Bhima doing amazing things, Arjuna doing amazing things, and Yudhisthira doing amazing things, particularly. And Draupadi doing amazing things, and Kunti doing amazing things. While they weren't complacent, they were quite animated. But they always have felt themselves dependent. That means they understood that whatever it was that they were exhibiting was Krishna's arrangement. It was Krishna's gift. That's a lesson that we all stand to learn and live by. We all have something. And our lives may not be portrayed or exciting like the Pandavas. We may not have death-threatening moments daily. Only when you walk along the street on Sunday, so many cars moving around. Gotta watch where you're going. It's a principle of life to feel whatever it is that you have is given by Krishna, to use that thing in Krishna's service vigorously, enthusiastically, boldly, courageously, theistically, carefully, but with great enthusiasm, at the same time feeling dependent upon the Lord and protected by the Lord. Prabhupada writes that in this world, to be dependent on the mercy of someone else is the utmost sign of misfortune. But in the case of our transcendental relation with the Lord, it is the most fortunate case. When we can live completely dependent on Him. Prabhupada's writing is so wonderful. The material disease is due to thinking of becoming independent of everything. But the cruel material nature does not allow us to become independent. The false attempt to become independent of the stringent laws of nature is known as material advancement of experimental knowledge. The writing is so wonderful. This is Kunti is using herself. At this point, she's like not just instructing others; she's just pouring out her heart. But her example is instructive. The highest achievement of perfect civilization is to work with valor, but at the same time, depend completely on the Lord. So, let's just go over that a little bit. To be very dependent, like let's say a child, child is very dependent. Completely dependent. They can't even express what they want. They just wiggle their arms and legs and cry, and somehow you have to figure out what they want. I don't know how mothers do it. Somehow they understand what they want. But if the mother or father doesn't attend to their needs, they're just neglected. Or they may try to fulfill their needs and they get the wrong one. They're dependent. So in a mature stage of life, to be dependent, Prabhupada is indicating, that's how unfortunate. But from a spiritual point of view, that's the reality. We're dependent, and recognize that dependence doesn't mean just you sit there and wiggle your arms and legs and cry and expect everything comes to you. But with the maturity of adult life, act with valor. It indicates both with virtue, with this strong decision and great courage. Discrimination and enthusiasm. Vigorously, very strongly, but in a mood of dependence. Going back to that story that I narrated earlier about Samudra Sen, how was it that Samudra Sen was able to defeat Bhima? His fighting was so vigorous because he wanted to see Krishna. And that was his means to draw Krishna to the battlefield, to give protection to Bhima. So he had to be very valiant. He was with great spiritual purpose. Acharyas commenting on that, they asked the question, who is the greater devotee? How can you say someone's greater than the Pandavas? But because the motive, the intensity of enthusiasm of Samudra Sen was so great, he's in the greater position. Just to draw Krishna's attention, to see Krishna, with that eagerness to satisfy Krishna, to please Krishna, to have Krishna's darshan. Like the elderly Bengali woman that climbed on the shoulders of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to get darshan of Jagannath. And Govinda wanted to pull her down. Lord Chaitanya said, if I could have such eagerness as this woman, I would be well situated in spiritual life. Eagerness. Yet at the same time, feelings of great dependence. When I, a number of you attended the yatra in Jagannath Puri. Some of you didn't, but some of you did. And after that visit to Jagannath Puri, there were several very, very prominent impressions that I took with me, and one of them was this very one. Narration after narration after narration in Chaitanya's Leela and the associates of Lord Chaitanya, Haridas Thakur and Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami and King Prataparudra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Very prominent are two seemingly opposite moods. A degree of humility that's just astounding. And simultaneously, a degree of desire to achieve the goal of life. When there's like this intense eagerness, it seems going the opposite direction to be intensely humble. Or you're intensely humble. The opposite of being unrestrictedly enthusiastic. But that's the characteristic of a great soul. The great souls that are described in Chaitanya's Leela. And that's the direction that's being pointed to here. Queen Kunti, in her own way, is abjectly humble, unrestrictedly enthusiastic. It's because they're not contradictory, because they're on the spiritual platform. Enthusiasm that's on the material platform, that's passion. But enthusiasm that's on the spiritual platform, it knows no obstacle. Ahoitukiya pratyeta. Nothing can check it. Obstacle, what obstacle? Difficulty, what difficulty? It's mercy. It's Krishna. Krishna will come with his difficulty. That's not difficulty. That's mercy. And as Prabhupada is writing here, with great valor did the Pandavas do all that they did. But not through false ego. With absence of false ego, fully in the spiritual conception of themselves, which is a naturally humble conception. The question about evaluating our spiritual standing, here it is. Unbridled enthusiasm. I was using the word steady. Intensify that many times. Unchecked enthusiasm. At the same time, completely humble. The humility of Haridas Thakur would melt anyone's heart. Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami. Sanatan Goswami, the Acharya to carry forward Lord Chaitanya's teachings in the next generation. He personally acknowledged that very special, not that he had given him that title, but he had given him that degree of mercy. Yet he felt himself unqualified to even sit in the same company as Lord Chaitanya's associates. Sanatan Goswami, the prime minister in the government of Nawab Hussein Shah, comes with straw in his teeth, falling at the feet of Lord Chaitanya, please instruct me who I am. I'm such a fool. I don't know. Etc., etc. So it's... Queen Kunti is instructing us similarly here. The Pandavas were undoubtedly completely dependent upon the goodwill of Lord Sri Krishna. But they were not idle parasites of the Lord. They were all highly qualified, both by personal character and by physical activities. Still, they always looked for the mercy of the Lord because they knew that every living being is dependent by constitutional position. So there are these two terms that they're introduced in the purport. And it's the theme of this section. Sanata and Anata. I'll give you a little personal example that really struck me not so long ago. This Sanata, Anata position. I was going for a morning walk here in India, and the usual street dog scene was happening. You know, you're from India, so just walking, and when you walk, there's a certain territory that this is this group of dogs' territory. And, you know, they don't let humans go by, but they don't let another dog even come near. As soon as a dog comes near, One barks, looks around, the others come out, and you know what the scene is. They show their teeth, bristle their hair, look real mean and tough. Get out of town. You don't belong in this part of town. This is our part of town. And you know, there's one against, you know, 15, and the one is like... either just turns and goes the other way or scoots around. You've seen it, right? So I was in an early morning walk in the nice morning air. I was doing at least that much, so my back wasn't hurting. And one elderly gentleman came along, and he was walking his little poodle. Had a little leash and walking his poodle, and rawr, rawr, rawr. Then the dog saw the little poodle, and all 15 of them came out. And so the master took his poodle under one arm, took a stick in the other arm, and walked right past the barking dogs. They looked at the stick. They looked at each other. They looked at the stick. They looked at each other. They shrugged their shoulders and went and sat down again. Little poodle was just wiggling his tail. And one is Sanata and the other is Anata. He had nothing to worry about. His master was taking care of him. Remember hearing Prabhupada give a lecture on the same point. He's saying that if a young boy, he's walking down the street holding the hand of his father, and a big dog comes out, bow wow, shows his teeth, and the little boy doesn't even bother. He just holds his hand and says, go away. Because he's fearless, knowing that my father has always taken care of me. He's Sanata. My father is very powerful and very strong. He's always taking care of me. I have nothing to worry about. I've certainly seen children when a ferocious dog comes or something comes and they cry and carry on. But this was Prabhupada's example. I don't know if it's something that he personally experienced, just like I just described something. But it's the position of feeling safety when you know that you have a protector. It's not just protection from the gnashing teeth of a dog. It's protection from the material onslaught of the material energy. Not just from physical harm. It's from the whole existence in this material realm. The whole gamut of unwanted experiences of life. Now, it's not to say that when you become a devotee, the material energy is quiet. The Pandavas had their calamities, but they always self-protected in the midst of the calamities, before the calamity and after the calamity. This is the Sanatha position. So what such a person doesn't want is their Natha or their Prabhu or their master to go away. And that's the scene. Krishna's going away. And Kunti's feeling great separation. And she's not restricting her expression of that feeling. She's direct. Please don't go away. And she's now making up the reasons why we need your protection. There's all these people that after the Kurukshetra battle, they're in this get back mentality. They're going to want to come and give us a problem, and so please stay. But the Pandavas, they're perfectly capable of any kings. They've already demonstrated. But it's not just Krishna, please give your leave your armies and stay here and make sure no armies invade us. We want your association. In the purport, Prabhupada refers to Bhagavad Gita 7:19. It's about surrender. So he paraphrases it this way. After many, many births, one fortunate person becomes aware of the fact that Vasudeva is all in all, and that the best way of leading one's life is to surrender unto him completely. That is the sign of a Mahatma. Again, a question of how can we evaluate our progression? Are we feeling some other shelter? Are we in the mood? I gave the indication of what is the mood of service, the attitude of service that we have, the eagerness for service. Here it's more specifically feeling no other shelter but Krishna. That is the sign of the Mahatma. Text 38. As the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the disappearance of the living spirit, similarly, if you do not look upon us, all our fame and activities, along with the Pandavas and the Yadus, will end at once. So now she's just starting to introduce this other thing, that is, actually it's already there, that you've appeared for the benefit of many kings or for the honor of Yadu. So, the situation is, Kunti has, obviously she has a relationship with her own sons. But she also has the relationship with her family before she was married and had sons. As with any, Prabhupada remarks, any woman has these two identities. The family in which she was born and all those relatives. And then from marriage, her own husband and children and all the in-laws and that whole scene. So there's affinity for both. Natural affinity for both. So, when Krishna's leaving Hastinapur, he's going to be giving his association to her relatives on the father's side of the family, father and mother's side of the family, as opposed to her husband and her own children's side of the family. That's where he's been. He's been in Hastinapur. He's going back to Dwarka. So, which he's hinting at by saying, I'll just read it again. As the name and fame of a particular body is finished upon the disappearance of a living spirit, similarly, if you do not look upon us, all of our fame and activities, along with the Pandavas and Yadus, will end at once. The indication is, he's going to not only leave Hastinapur, he's going to leave the planet. Because when he leaves Hastinapur, he's the soul leaving the body of the Pandavas. But going to the Yadus, giving life to the Yadus. So if you don't look upon us, if you don't remain on this earth, then we have no life. And whatever vitality, whatever assets, strength, ability, fame, name, wealth, whatever we have, is gone because the soul is gone. The soul of life is gone. All those things are gone. She's subtly indicating she knows what's going to happen. Kunti's very deep. But again, it's her heartfelt expression of complete dependence. As the body is dependent upon the soul, we are dependent upon you. Just having your glance in each of these verses, the messages, they're separate purports, but the message is all very thematic. Just by Krishna's presence on earth, everything has been flourishing. In contrast, when Krishna leaves, Yudhisthira Maharaj is seeing all these symptoms of bad omens and deterioration of good qualities. And how could this be if Krishna's still on the earth? So inductively, he's understanding Krishna has left. He doesn't want to say it. He doesn't want to think it. It's just that for those who are fully dependent upon Krishna, it's an unthinkable thought. So Kunti here is only hinting at it. That way she knows, as Yudhisthira, when Krishna went from Hastinapur back to Dwarka, ceremoniously, with proper protocol, members of the emperor's dynasty or kingdom was sent to accompany Krishna all the way back to Dwarka. Ceremoniously escorted back to Dwarka. It's not because Krishna needed some extra armies to travel with. It's just a nice gesture. But it was more than a nice gesture. It was, Arjuna was accompanying the Pandavas' armies to escort Krishna back to Dwarka with the explicit assignment of finding out what's up. What's Krishna's plan next? Because he's done everything. Kunti said it, his purpose for appearance is now complete. And now you're leaving. So is it a fact that Krishna is now going to leave the planet? Arjuna, you go with him and find out what's the plan. You're his best friend, he'll tell you. So Arjuna accepted that assignment. And Arjuna was gone for 7 months. No sign, no emails, no faxes, no mobile phone calls, no Brahmin messengers. Not a word. And why is there no word? Because you don't speak that which you don't want to speak. No word. And then all these ill omens. And then Arjuna came back looking like devastation. And Yudhisthira asked him, why are you looking like this? Is it maybe this, or this, or this, or this, or this, or... He didn't even give the one that he knew was the right answer. He just didn't want to say it. Although he knew it. These are diplomatic people. They know how to read things. Kunti knows. Purport Prabhupada writes, Kunti Devi is quite aware that the existence of the Pandavas was due to Sri Krishna only. Their existence. Not only the functions that they did, just that they existed. There was no meaning to their existence other than serving Krishna. Now, that's the constitutional position of every living entity. The difference between them and us is they realize it and we don't. And they act on that consciousness all the time, and we're trying. Sometimes. So there are heroes in this regard. There are exemplars. The persons who we emulate, we try to take inspiration from Kunti and the Pandavas and Draupadi. The Pandavas are undoubtedly well established in name and fame and are guided by the great King Yudhisthira, who is morality personified. And the Yadus are undoubtedly great allies, but without the guidance of Lord Krishna, all of them are non-entities. As much as the senses of the body are useless without the guidance of consciousness. No one should be proud of his prestige, power, and fame without being guided by the favor of the Supreme Lord. The living beings are always dependent, sanata. Text 39. Kunti addresses Krishna as Gadadhara, the holder of the Gada. Our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your feet, and therefore it appears beautiful. But when you leave, it will no longer be so. Just like when Krishna was in Vrindavan, just by the touch of Krishna's lotus feet on the land of Vrindavan, everything became just so marvelous. The ecstasy of the land, of the Dham, showed in so many ways of brilliant foliage with so many beautiful flowers and fruit-bearing trees, providing fruits in all seasons and so forth and so on. So, just by the touch of Krishna, in fact, this is one of the questions that was asked in the first chapter of this canto. By Krishna's presence on this earth, just by the touch of his lotus feet on this earth, or in the kingdom of the Pandavas, everything was bountiful, everything flourished, everything was perfect. Where will religious principles be protected? This is one of the questions. After the disappearance of Krishna, where is religious principles going to find their shelter? And the answer is right here in Srimad Bhagavatam. The answer is given. This is the final of the six questions. This is the sixth one. And the answer that's given is by Sutta, that just as simultaneously the sun may set in the west, but the moon may simultaneously arise in the east. So, were that to happen only with the moon rises, its brilliance is as brilliant as the sun, lighting the nighttime as if it's daytime with such brilliance. But with soothing and cooling rays instead of the hot, blistery rays of the sun. So, at the time of Krishna's departure, shortly thereafter, the moon-like, brilliant as the sun, Srimad Bhagavatam has made its appearance. As Krishna made his exit, Bhagavatam made his appearance, providing the same shelter as did Krishna's presence on this earth. And so, what we're doing, at least attempting to do right now, is get some of that brilliance into the darkness of our hearts and our lives by hearing this message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Later in the same canto, when Arjuna comes back to Hastinapur and discloses that the Pandavas have left, the Yadu dynasty has all left, and Krishna has left, and all of my strength has left, and all of my will to live has left. My life has gone, like a dead body flapping in the wind. But as he goes on speaking about Krishna, and speaking about Krishna, and speaking about Krishna, and specifically remembering the wonderful exchanges with Krishna, and specifically the message that Krishna gave in Bhagavad Gita, he's feeling invigorated. He's feeling different than he felt before. Then he realized actually Krishna gave his association, and that association remains in the form of his instructions. Just like our discussion before about Vani and Vapu association. Arjuna felt revived just by recalling and reciting the wonderful instructions of Bhagavad Gita. So similarly, the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam provide us wonderful subject matters to hear and discuss. And when we take the opportunity to vibrate those messages or hear those messages, just as Kunti is saying in her prayers, those who take advantage of the opportunity to hear or to speak or combination, then the vitality of life is restored. This is spiritual reawakening, a spiritual revival. Text 40. As these cities and villages are flourishing in all respects because the herbs and grains are in abundance, the trees are full of fruits, the rivers are flowing, the hills are full of minerals, and the oceans full of wealth, and all this is due to your glancing over them. We should understand that Krishna's glance is very powerful. Could somebody speak with this gentleman that's speaking very loudly and ask him to keep his voice down? It would be nice if he could do that. I doubt if it's going to happen, though. Let's think of some examples of, or recall some examples of the Lord's glance and what it does. We start with the glance of creation. When Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan, it becomes activated. Living entities and time energy and the whole thing starts to move just by his glance. Look over, just glance over a lump of dirt and see what happens. Nothing much happens. But Mahavishnu's glance is powerful like that. Or when Ramachandra wanted to cross the ocean, he called Samudra to come, and Samudra didn't come. Lord Ram, with angry eyes, was glancing over the ocean, and what happened? The whole ocean started to boil. Those of you that do a little cooking, put a little pot on the stove, turn the flame up high. How long will it take for a little pot to boil? How long will it take for a whole ocean to boil? The whole ocean was boiling. The fish, the aquatics, were dying. Samudra came out of the ocean. I wasn't understanding your identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please forgive me. What would you like? Just by his eyes. Or we find the description when Krishna was entering into Dwarka, and the chaste ladies were standing on the rooftops in Dwarka, wanting to embrace Krishna, but with shyness, knowing that that was not appropriate. So Krishna, just glancing upon them on the rooftops, just with his glance, he entered into their hearts and satisfied them as much as their own embracing Krishna. Or Krishna in Vrindavan. When he, so many pastimes, we find descriptions in the writings of the Goswamis, when Krishna would cast a sidelong glance upon the gopis. And that was enough to just send them into ecstasy. And it's not just, you know, the lusty affairs of boys and girls. It's the powerful glance of Krishna. Similarly, just Krishna's glancing over the earth. What Kunti is saying, it's not an exaggeration, it's not just a poetic metaphor. It's her realization. This is the Supreme Personality who creates everything, and he makes this spectacle of splendor happen by the touch of his lotus feet and by his glance. This is the power of the person who she's wanting to stay in Hastinapur for. She wants, very intensely, eagerly, she wants Krishna's association. It's not that she wants the opulence. She wants Krishna's association. And she's giving these different reasons why she wants Krishna's association, but it just boils down to she wants Krishna's association. So that ends this little section, 37 through 40. This little bit from the purport. Human prosperity flourishes by natural gifts and not by gigantic industrial enterprises. The natural gifts such as grains and vegetables, fruits, rivers, hills of jewels and minerals, and the seas are full of pearls, are supplied by the order of the Supreme. And as he desires, material nature produces them in abundance or restricts them at times. The natural law is that the human being may take advantage of these godly gifts by nature and satisfactorily flourish on them without being captivated by the exploitative motive of lording it over material nature. The more we attempt to exploit material nature according to our whims of enjoyment, the more we shall be entrapped by the reaction of such exploitative attempts. If we have sufficient grains, fruits, vegetables, and herbs, then what is the necessity of running a slaughterhouse and killing poor animals? A man need not kill an animal if he has sufficient grains and vegetables to eat, and so forth. So, abiding by principles that are pleasing to Krishna brings everything that we need, and we act in a way that is not pleasing to Krishna, we can expect restriction and expect nature to hit back. And that's what happens. And that's a fair amount of what these, I was mentioning this television show that religious leaders were saying. Although they didn't use the word karma, they were speaking a very similar message like that. God's giving us a lesson about how we've strayed from the path in different ways. So it's notice. We need to get back to being aligned with God. To be in harmony with God means to be in harmony with natural laws and natural ways of living. And this, what Prabhupada is writing, is just common sense. But instead, people are thinking advancement of civilization is all these other things. The natural beauty of Vrindavan is not the same When I first came here, and what I just saw walking along the main road, it's not the same. The natural beauty is gone. There are places where there's natural beauty, and it's naturally very beautiful. But not only cars, the sewage, and so many things. So, Kunti wants Krishna's feet and Krishna's glance. And we should also be eager for the same. We're hitting the home stretch. Three verses left. In these summary notes, the verses we just covered, Kunti is expressing her position of having Krishna as her exclusive master, and this exclusive shelter taking in Krishna invokes his mercy. Now, his mercy comes in the form of all facilities. Just two comments about this I want to add. Prabhupada explained that the practical effect of this hearing and chanting activity, one effect is that it brings decorations upon or into the lives of those who take it up. Their bad qualities go and their good qualities come. Prabhupada said that priests come to him. Priests were coming to him and asking him, Swamiji, how are you doing this? Persons from our own religion were taking no interest in spiritual life. And now they're not only taking interest in spiritual life, they're dedicating themselves wholeheartedly and exclusively to religious activity. What have you done? How have you done this? And Prabhupada's statement, he posed the question and then gave his answer. He said, I've not bribed them. I'm not offering them wealth. They come from wealthy families. They come from good backgrounds. But they're not finding satisfaction in those things. And just from this simple activities, chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and dedicating their activities to Krishna's service, they are now able to give up all the bad habits that they were once having, that their lives were simply infested with, and now they're gone. The four regular principles, and he would recite them. My students don't come to me and say, Swamiji, can I go to the movies? Can I have some dollars to go to the movies? I want to see this new movie. They have no interest. How does that happen? Please understand that it's a simple message that Prabhupada is speaking in this regard, but the individuals become decorated with attraction towards Krishna and detachment from all the rest. Bhakti parishano bhavo viraktir anyatracha. It happens. And then another thing that happens is all facilities that one needs for service come from the hearing and chanting activities, that sincerely surrendering oneself to taking up hearing and chanting and giving that opportunity to others. In 1968, Prabhupada gave a very moving presentation on the occasion of Bhaktisiddhanta's disappearance day in Los Angeles. He was describing this historical thing we all know. He wrote to Bhaktisiddhanta. He was saying 32 years ago, 1934. 1936. December 9th or 10th, I wrote one letter. I'm just a householder. Your brahmacharya sannyas disciples, they're doing so much personal service for you. I do not have the opportunity, but it is my desire to do so. What can I do for you? Prabhupada explained, I had this desire, and I was expressing. So my Guru Maharaj wrote back within a week's time, a letter from Bombay to Puri, and the letter was postmarked back. Prabhupada said, my dear so-and-so, thank you for your nice letter. Here is some service that you can do. Take this message of Lord Chaitanya. Deliver it in the English-speaking language to the whole world. This will be good for you and good for them. The order of Guru Maharaj had come, and what could I do? So I decided I would take this as my life and soul. But I did not know I would have to do such and such. So when you make a commitment to carry out some service, you may not know what's down the road. What are the good fortunes and what are the obstacles that you'll have to encounter? But Prabhupada was saying, a surrendered soul doesn't consider those things. Good fortune and hardships and obstacles. Whatever that is down the road, that's just part of the service, and you accept it, whatever it is. Because it's service. Accepting the good fortune, accepting the obstacles and hardships. And Prabhupada explained, I had no facility. So I translated Srimad Bhagavatam. At least there was a little foothold, he used the expression, when I came to America. There was something to give to people. But he came with nothing. But just faith in the instruction to do so, that all facility come, came. This is the mercy of my Guru Maharaj, and this is the result of taking such instruction seriously. All facility will come. What facility would he require? At another occasion, Prabhupada said, I had no idea. He had some idea, but I had no idea what would come. I just had faith in the instruction of my Guru Maharaj. Once Prabhupada was asked by a reporter, Swamiji, where do you get all your money? And Prabhupada's reply was, from Krishna. He said, yeah, where do you get all your money? Same place you get your money, from Krishna. And what do? We chant. And we hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And Krishna sends us so much money. You're just envious. But then Prabhupada started bragging how much money we spend every month. And he asked the reporters the same question. Where do you think we get the money? We get it from Krishna. We don't have any business. You work so hard into all your business things. We don't have any business. Our business is hearing and chanting. We have so much money. And we'll invite you to come join us, and you'll say no. You'd rather be envious. Directly to his face. All facilities come. Just like Krishna's glance and Krishna's impressions of his feet upon the earth made everything bountiful. And this is Krishna's literary incarnation, and one who takes shelter of Krishna's literary incarnation, all facilities come. One who does that with faith and a pure heart. All facilities for service come, and a pure heart What more can you ask for? On another occasion, Prabhupada said, when I was young, it said in my horoscope I would become a very wealthy person. And I was on my way to becoming a very wealthy person. But Krishna took everything away. But now he's given me so much more. Before I had several children, now I have thousands of children. Before I had some wealth, now I have so much more wealth. Although, to have that so much more wealth, he gave up the idea of having wealth. You follow? Sanata. Shelter. It's mystical. It defies reason. And it happens consistently. It can be reproduced scientifically again and again and again. Same experiment, same observations, same conclusions. Again and again. Very scientific. Except who is willing to take that position of placing themselves fully dependent upon the mercy of the Supreme Lord? Small condition for the experiment. So what the devotee wants is not so much facility as Kunti is not wanting the Hastinapura is replete with so many abundances of valuable things. She wants Krishna's association. So now the concluding verses. Again, she addresses Krishna as Vishvatma. Ata Vishesha Vishvatman Vishvamurte Svakeshume Sneha Asham Imam Chindi Dritam Andishu Vishnishu. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe. So poetic, huh? Please, therefore, sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. What is she saying? She wants to take sannyas, right? No, that's not what she's saying. She's not saying she wants to leave her sons. I want to abandon my duties of life and take sannyas. She's not saying that. Sever the material portion of affection that I feel. Because here's the situation. Krishna's leaving Hastinapura, going to Dwarka. Terrible, because he's leaving her sons, who she has great affection for. But then he's going to Dwarka, where the Yadus are, who she has great affection for. So they'll be happy while the Pandavas will be unhappy. But if he stays in Hastinapura, then the Pandavas will be happy and the Yadus will be unhappy. It's win-lose. She wants a win-win. Because of the material affinity, the material portion of affection. Prabhupada writes in the second paragraph, a pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. And he gives examples. Such personalities as a brahmana, a devotee, a king, or a public leader must be very broad-minded in discharging their respective duties. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and, being weak, she prayed to be freed from such bondage of family affection. The Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe, or the Lord of the universal mind, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. Now, this isn't... Kunti's not a family breaker. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is not, and Prabhupada was not, and people think like that, that a sadhu breaks families. The sadhu brings spiritual attachment, spiritual affinity that far supersedes the material affinity. And persons that only know material affinity, they don't understand that. And they resent the sadhu. It's written in the Bible, for those of you that are not familiar with the Bible. It's an age-old thing. People that become very devoted spiritually are resented by family members. While my family members, on the one hand, appreciate what I'm dedicating myself to do, which they don't really understand, but they understand there's some very strong dedication. On the other hand, they feel that they've lost something. They've lost they've lost a brother or a family member. It means, I'm not fun anymore. I don't like to do all the things that they like to do only. And they don't like to do the things I like to do only. So, we appreciate one another, but the fun, I'm not fun anymore. And we all know that from our own relations. When you become a devotee, you really quickly find out who your friends are. And you find out who your friends aren't. And friends in the material world means you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. You supply my sense gratification in a certain way. So you're my friend. I'll supply your sense gratification in some reciprocal way. You stop satisfying my sense gratification, contract's over. What happened to you? Everybody's nodding their head. We all know what it's like. We all know what it's like. What is friendship in this world? Real friendship doesn't exist. They're not well-wishers. They want something. You supply something. That means you're a friend. You're a business agent, a supplier or a receiver of goods and services. It's not friendship. And real friendship, real family is right here. Spiritual family. Prabhupada writes, relations, I'm going to read it because it's so wonderful. This is the third paragraph of the next purport. Kunti's affection for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis is not out of range of devotional service. It's not wrong to have affection for family members, in other words. Then there's going to be a but. But. Because the service of the Lord and the service of the devotees are identical. So you have affection for family members. Those family members are devotees. That's not outside of devotional service. But here the affection of Kunti Devi for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis was due to family relation. This tie of affection in terms of material relation is the relation of Maya, because the relations of the body or the mind are due to the influence of the external energy. Now here's the sentence I underlined. Relations of the soul established in relationship with the Supreme Soul are factual relations. That's what we want. So she has affection with the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. They're devotees. But there's a material portion of that relation. She's asking the Lord to remove the material portion. So it's only soul to soul with the Supreme Soul, Krishna, in the center. Let that remain only. Please remove the material portion of affinity. Let me have a spiritual relationship only with those who are family connected to me. When Kunti Devi wanted to cut off the family relation, she meant to cut off the relation of the skin. The skin relation is the cause of material bondage, but the relation of the soul is the cause of freedom. Nice. Let our relationships with one another, family members, friends, society, community, whatever, be on the basis of soul-to-soul relationships. There is such a thing. And there is such a thing as a mixed relationship. And Kunti Devi is praying for unmixed relationships, unmixed devotion. This is stemming from her sanatha, her singular and exclusive shelter in Krishna. One who wants singular and exclusive shelter in Krishna, it's not that we have to cut ourselves off from the rest of the world. That's not a requirement. It's not even natural. It's not normal. And there may be a tendency to do like that in an immature stage. Just cut yourself off from everybody and everything. It's unnatural. But then, how do we deal with the fact that there are these other relationships and there's the material side to those relationships? Kunti's giving us the answer. It's by strengthening of our hearing and chanting, our attraction for Krishna becomes stronger. And then with great sincere feeling, we call to Krishna, please to remove the material portion of that affinity in our relationships with one another. So we can relate soul to soul. Kunti's intense. She wants nothing but Krishna. Krishna, only Krishna, and nothing but Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And she's the mother of the Pandavas. Instruction. We're social beings. Elsewhere, Prabhupada describes, so we naturally we want relationships with others to try to make that zero or anesthetize that. It's not natural. It's not our teaching. And then how to establish the right kind of uplifting relationships. Place Krishna in the center. Keep Krishna in the center. Desire the increased shelter of Krishna through this relationship. And keep working on the relationship in that direction. That way the relations that we have stay in force, but the spiritual portion becomes more prominent. And the material portion fades. So when we come together to do like this, to put the subject matter, the sound vibration of Krishna at the center, it spiritualizes the relationship. When you get together with your friends, like the Mataji was asking about getting association, make sure when you do have the opportunity for association, Krishna Katha is at the center of that relation. Don't just catch up on the news. Who did it? Who did what to whom? final verse. Oh, Krishna. Oh, friend of Arjuna. Oh, chief amongst the descendants of Rishni. You are the destroyer of those political parties which are disturbing elements on this earth. Your prowess never deteriorates. You are the proprietor of the transcendental abode, and you descend to relieve the distresses of the cows, the brahmanas, and the devotees. You possess all mystic powers, and you are the preceptor of the entire universe. You are the almighty God, and I offer you my respectful obeisances. End of Kunti's prayers. Krishna just smiled. His smile acknowledged his acceptance of her prayers. Very good, very good. You have spoken very nicely. And you have spoken with such feeling. How much affection does Krishna have for Kunti? How much affection Kunti has for Krishna is a measure of how much affection Krishna has for Kunti. As Krishna, she understands Krishna, Krishna understands her. Her heart is bursting with affection for Krishna. He is her only shelter. How does Krishna feel towards Kunti? Because she has Krishna as her only shelter, naturally so, she understands Krishna very well. The subtleties of his moods and his interactions, and even in the affairs of the world, the hand of Krishna is very clearly there. The protecting hand of Krishna, she feels that. These wonderful prayers of Queen Kunti is to have those same feelings stirred in our hearts, because that's our natural position also. He's not our family relative. He hasn't taken birth in our family, our nephew, our cousin. He's appeared in a different manner. He's appeared in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam and in the form of his holy name and in his deity form. And the combination of this deity worship together with the hearing and chanting process, the Pancharatrika system and the Bhagavata Vidhi system, Krishna is giving himself to us. Like Krishna's given himself to Kunti, we have the same opportunity to realize intimate relationship with Krishna as Kunti had. So we can take great inspiration from Kunti, like a role model or a mentor or one to guide our life by, or mold our life after. Let's just read the concluding purport. It's very short. A summary of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna is made herein by Srimati Kunti Devi. The Almighty Lord has his eternal transcendental abode, where he is engaged in keeping Surabhi cows. He is served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. He descends on the material world to reclaim his devotees and to annihilate the disturbing elements in groups of political parties and kings who are supposed to be in charge of administration work. He creates, maintains, and annihilates by his unlimited energies, and still He is always full with prowess and does not deteriorate in potency. The cows, brahmanas, and devotees of the Lord are all objects of especial attention because they are very important factors for the general welfare of living beings. And Kunti has hit on the whole array. One can chant the glories of Krishna endlessly and find no limit. So it's not that Kunti has hit upon the limit of Krishna's glories, but it's time for Krishna to go. She's spoken her heart. And Krishna's going to go. Actually, the Bhagavatam describes a scenario, or a little scene that follows this, that's a little different than Mahabharata. The scene that next follows is, first it was Krishna's getting ready to go, and then Uttara approaches. Then Krishna's getting ready to go, and Kunti approaches. Next, Krishna's getting ready to go, Yudhisthira approaches. And Yudhisthira says, could you stay a couple more weeks? Krishna stays a couple more weeks. And then Krishna goes. In the Mahabharata, the description is slightly different. Krishna has already stayed a few more weeks. And then he lets Yudhisthira know, I must go. And he's getting ready to go, and he's on his chariots, and Kunti comes and speaks her prayers. A shorter version of what's here is in Mahabharata. And again, Krishna smiles, and Krishna goes. Like giving up one's life. Krishna's going. Then it just leaves the topics of Krishna. That's our situation. We haven't had that kind of association like Kunti has had. All we have is the topics of Krishna. So, can you imagine that Kunti and the Pandavas, what their subject matters were like after Krishna left? Just speaking about Krishna's wonderful qualities, Krishna's wonderful activities, Krishna's wonderful instructions, Krishna's kindness, Krishna's shelter. Krishna, 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 Krishna. So our life should be patterned after that. We have, as they did, duties to do. We have duties to do. Fulfill your duties. Fulfill your duties with Krishna in the center of those duties. Krishna in the center of your relationships. Krishna right at the center of your life and at the center of your heart's yearning and desire. Take that position of exclusive shelter in Krishna, and you can expect the mercy of Krishna to enter. This is what Kunti is teaching us. So it's nice to hear it. It's take these wonderful messages that Kunti is providing us and let it enter into your hearts, into your lives, into your day-to-day activity. Take that inspiration and go forward with it. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.